Welcome to BICOM's podcast. I am BICOM CEO James Sareen. I am delighted to be joined today by Dr. Sanam Vakil, who is the Deputy Head of the Middle East and Africa Programme at Chatham House, the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And Sanam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, James.
So if we could try and unpack now where we think we are in the latest in the sort of escalation and potentially the sort of standing down of the tensions between the US and Iran. And let's just think about, I suppose, what you think is going to happen next in terms of, is this really the end of it in terms of the Iranian regime? They fired these missiles at Iraqi bases that house US personnel, and they talked a lot internally about the sort of death and destruction that those missile strikes has caused, although, you know, the US and Iraqi said no personnel were killed. I mean, do you think that is the end of this cycle?
Unfortunately not. The reason I think we are bound to see more back and forth between Tehran and the Trump administration is because the Trump administration's maximum pressure campaign continues. And the crisis with the Iran nuclear agreement also continues. Iran remains heavily sanctioned and is under economic pressure. And we just don't see any off-ramp being offered by the Trump administration to Iran. So against that backdrop, I think more escalation is inevitable, either to try and convince the president through escalatory patterns that, similar to what we've seen over the past year, to come to the negotiating table, or to draw international attention to the Iran crisis. So, you know, we're sort of stuck in this moment. We can breathe a sigh of relief, but we're not over.
Yeah. I mean, we'll come back to that shortly, but I wanted to just ask a question about what now is the shape of the Iranian regime and its military forces, because Soleimani was this very, very large figure within the regime's capability to kind of project power abroad, to kind of run this network of organizations in a whole host of countries. And he was able to do a great deal for potentially not a huge amount of money and resources. And that was probably because of his own skills, his creativity, his kind of vision, his strategy that he built up over many years. I mean, how big a hole in the regime and its capability does his death leave?
He personally, of course, was an important figurehead and had symbolic importance. He was very popular as a military leader inside Iran. I don't think that Iran's strategy or engagement with proxy groups in the region is very much going to change. The Quds Force operates as an institution. It's not really about the individual. Of course, Soleimani had individual relationships that were very important, but his successor, Ghani, of course, is going to carry on the mantle. And I think that using his memory and the symbolism of his death is almost going to sort of strengthen those ties, not weaken them.
So if you're Hassan Nasrallah and Hezbollah, or you're the leader of Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq or elsewhere, the fact that you're dealing with Soleimani's successor or other people, you think that, you know, those relationships will be as strong and they will just carry on as before?
Yes, most definitely. And Iran is going to sort of reaffirm those relationships, and the new commander is going to also do that personally make sure that Iran can continue to have continuity in those ties.
And there was a curious thing about Soleimani. I mean, he was really popular. I mean, what was the reason for that? Was it because he wasn't involved in domestic politics? Was it because he was seen as, you know, beyond the corruption that potentially was taking place at home? Or was it something about his military achievements? What would you put it down to?
It's always a combination of both.
Right.
He was popular domestically because he was non-factional, and he seemed to appear to have good relations with popular figures also inside Iran, including the foreign minister, Javad Zarif, but also members of the conservative factions as well. And he didn't get involved into the, you know, weeds of Iranian politics, but instead was a nationalist, loyalist to the Islamic Republic. And, you know, that was his sort of commitment to Iran. And his popularity really soared. I mean, he was commander since 1998, but his popularity soared, I think, through social media, first of all. There were, while Instagram was still reposting their tweets, you know, there was all sorts of sort of daily imagery about Qasem Soleimani and his achievements outside of Iran's territory. But he really gained notoriety in the fight against Daesh, ISIS, in 2014. And the message that was really presented back in Iran was that Qasem Soleimani and the Quds Force protected Iranians from being attacked by ISIS. So that's the narrative that many Iranians believe, that if it wasn't for Qasem Soleimani, ISIS would have come to Iran in a more meaningful way than it did. If there were one or two terrorist attacks inside Iran, if you remember, and ISIS did try to recruit Sunni Iranians in Kurdistan and in the Arab area in the south, in Ahvaz area.
Right. I mean, how can we sort of depict the last sort of few months of Soleimani's life in that a lot of what he was trying to achieve, I mean, arguably looked a little bit shaky. I mean, if you look at sort of what he was trying to do in Syria, I mean, yes, he sort of saved the Assad regime, but he also was trying to establish, you know, all kinds of military positions in Syria. He hadn't been very successful at doing that. There's talk that, you know, that Iran wanted a port and an air base in Syria, and the Russians have sort of blocked that, that he was trying to bring in all kinds of missiles into Syria, but Israel's kind of been fighting and carrying out airstrikes for years and, you know, arguably quite successful at stopping that kind of initiative. And also, you know, if we look at what was going on with popular protests in Lebanon, in Iraq, and even in Iran, I mean, there was this wave of discontent. And there was an anti-Iranian theme to some of that in Lebanon and certainly in Iraq. So, I mean, could we say that maybe his sort of life's work was starting to crumble a bit towards the end of his life, or would you see it differently?
I think you're quite right. Within the past, the last 2 quarters of 2019, without a doubt, Iran and its regional presence was under threat. Protests in Lebanon and Iraq were very critical of Iran's influence and presence in both of those countries. And then, you know, the imagery and sort of visuals of Iran's own November crackdown, I think, were very powerful and striking, coupled with the numbers of deaths and reports of, you know, thousands of people being detained. Iran did indeed end the year in a weaker position. I mean, I think it's too early to say if Iran was, I didn't take a zero-sum interpretation of what was taking place, though, during that time period, because I sort of see Iran's engagement in the Middle East as very long-term, and they don't operate only in a sort of short, you know, 6 month to 1 year window. Their vision is much longer, and they have the luxury of having that sort of longer term strategy, because obviously politics in Iran are not purely democratic by any means. And so, you know, they're not necessarily, particularly on foreign policy issues, answerable to their population. So yes, Soleimani was being pushed back in Syria. Yes, Israel has repeatedly tried to constrain Iran's movements in Syria, and as have the Russians to a certain degree. But I think that what the Iranian strategy was to sort of disguise their presence or hide their presence. By doing so, you also saw Iran taking a backseat to some of the diplomatic initiatives during that period as well. And I think that that's sort of part of that longer term strategy where they were trying to burrow themselves into the remains of the political system so that they would still be there, maybe in a year, maybe in 5 years or 10 years. So I think that their strategy is much more forward-looking in that way.
Yeah, so it might look like a sort of short-term weakening, but actually it's sort of laying the groundwork for a much longer-term deep engagement. And I understand that.
Exactly.
When we spoke last year about US and Iran and the nuclear deal and what the options were, I think we were talking about how the US presidential election cycle has a big bearing on this. And do you still believe that in terms of there being any kind of talks, there isn't really any reason for the Iranian regime to engage properly, at least until they know the outcome of the election? I mean, either Trump gets reelected and they have to deal with that, or, you know, a Democrat comes in and potentially goes back into the nuclear deal or something similar. Did you still hold that view?
Yes, I do think 2020 is a really important marker for Iran. I think that there are debates inside the country about engagement and the value of engaging before the re-election, with some people, again, continuing to argue that Trump is the person to make a deal with, that he is looking for something quick and this could suit Iran's interests. And he probably could deliver congressional approval in a way that Obama could not. But at the same time, knowing full well that future negotiations are going to be lengthy, many in the political establishment don't want to invest with a president who might not be there in a few months from now. So I think there is value in waiting, but I, at the same time, I don't think that the Iranians are expecting a Democratic candidate at this point to just walk back into the JCPOA. There would have to be negotiations with any president, be it Trump or a Democrat, come 2021.
I mean, do you think the regime, you know, with the economic sanctions and the other issues which have heightened in the last few weeks, do you think they can actually safely wait out another 11 months just to see what happens without engaging in anything serious?
It seems that has been their calculation to date. They survived, from their perspective, the November protests. I mean, the protests were much more widespread, I think, than they imagined them to be. And of course, the backlash and the crackdown was much more severe than many people anticipated to be at the same time. But they were able to implement the increase in gas, in petrol prices, and begin their cash transfer program. So that is going to sort of save some money in the budget. And I think that they are still paying government salaries. The private sector is expected to grow in 2020. So I think that they feel that they can weather the storm of the next year. But probably by 2021, there's going to be much more urgency to move the dial on negotiations.
Yeah. I mean, it feels a bit like, you know, 2020 could just be similar to 2019 in the, you know, the Iranian regime sort of carries on gradually sort of violating aspects of the nuclear deal. The Europeans keep saying that they're really worried about it. They keep saying that maybe we do need a big negotiation around everything, Iran's regional activity, missiles, nuclear deal. America keeps doing what it's doing. Iran carries out activity, like aggressive attacks like it did in 2019. But this could all just carry on. Very similar to 2019. I mean, do you think that's possible?
Absolutely. I think, yeah. I mean, there are three scenarios for the year ahead. One is sort of the muddle through, similar to what we saw last year. And that muddle through could have, you know, peaks and troughs of lower level escalations, but there will be no breakthrough in terms of sanctions relief, no breakthrough in terms of diplomacy, and no serious crisis. There is, of course, the more dramatic option of a more serious crisis re-emerging, really, because I think that from the Iranian more conservative perspective, escalation is the only way to move the dial and to push the president. And then, of course, the diplomatic scenario really takes off. But I see that less likely with the JCPOA being so fragile and Europe really not having been able to accomplish anything thus far, even with President Macron's initiative. And with Abe also trying to encourage some multilateral diplomacy as well.
Mm-hmm. But is there, I mean, just in terms of Trump's response, I mean, Trump did show that if he's pushed to a certain extent or there's something that really hits a nerve in terms of the US, like, for instance, what happened in Iraq just before the new year, that he will respond and he'll respond in a very devastating way, like he did by killing Soleimani. So would the regime not be worried that he's capable of doing that?
Yes, of course. And I think that's why they calibrated their response back. And they were careful to ensure that there was no loss of American life. But I think that the president also probably realized the gravity of the killing of Qasem Soleimani, and the sort of uncertainty and international anxiety was probably not productive for his leadership as well. Yes, perhaps for domestic purposes, as many people have been speculating, impeachment and other issues were removed off of the front pages for a few days. But, you know, the problems and crises that he is facing also are ongoing. So I think that both sides have maybe learned a bit more about each other through this crisis, or I hope that they have.
I mean, so talking about that very long-term Iranian objective and the way they work in terms of strategy, my final question was just going to be that, you know, Iran wants the US out of Iraq, and arguably you could say that the events of the last week or so have been painful for the Iranian regime in the short term, but in the long term they potentially make it more likely that the US will leave Iraq sooner rather than later. Would you, and that would be, you know, a big win for the Iranian regime. Would you agree with that?
I think it, I mean, it seems like it would be a win for Iran, but I'm not sure if it is a win for Iran.
Right.
For a few reasons. First of all, I'm not sure that American troops will leave in the end. Because the vote was non-binding and they have a year to execute should they decide to proceed. And, you know, much can change over a year. So I think it's too early to make a call on what's going to take place in Iraq. But secondly, if they do leave, chances are, or the administration has hinted that they might sanction the Iraqi government, which I think would be really devastating for Iraqi security. And they would be doing that in order to constrain Iran's influence. But I think the challenge for Iran, really, particularly if the United States leaves, is that they are going to be responsible for managing a very, you know, difficult security terrain. The United States and Iran have been operating in tandem in Iraq for a number of years now, and they work together. Not directly, but indirectly in the fight against ISIS. So I think it would be very important for Iran to not overstate the benefits of an American departure from Iraq.
Dr. Sanam Vakil, thank you so much for joining us. We've covered so much there, but thank you so much for your insight and your analysis, as always.
Thank you for having me.